We would like to advise that the following program may contain adult themes, occasional nudity, and language that may offend some listeners.
Thank God it's...
the Civic Theatre in Wagga Wagga for another edition of Thank God It's Friday. And please welcome this week's gang. It is Gene Kitson, Tommy Dean and Jennifer Wong. And soon there'll be music with Rachel and Ben Whitchurch. But first, as always, here is the news from nowhere. The sending of medical reminders to those of us over 60 must be the only thing keeping the postal service going. Some days there are nothing except medical reminders in my postbox, my text messages and my email. It's like a daily organ recital. The optometrist wants to see me once a year, the skin cancer fellow at six-month intervals, the physio once a month. The GP won't issue any more pills until she sees me. She says I've got high blood pressure, while the dentist's monthly reminders are so hysterical, I think the GP should check the dentist's blood pressure. I'm not saying the medical folks don't mean well. I'm not saying they are using me as one might use an ATM, removing money at regular intervals. I'm not saying, I'm really not, that they have private school fees to pay, although private schools are very expensive. All I'm saying is that every branch of the medical profession has an interest in me. Each profession is convinced that the agent of my demise will be the disease in which they happen to have expertise. All the same, how many appointments can one person have? Being over 60 starts to feel like a full-time occupation. What do you do? A kindly young person might ask at a barbecue. No, I'll say, I'm over 60. That means medical appointments most mornings and operational two once a year, vaccinations as if one were a pincushion in need of use, and then I fit in paid employment as best I can. At this point, even the most kindly young person discovers they need a fresh beer. I just wish the doctors would develop an annual pit stop, much like my local mechanic, in which they check my oil, cholesterol, replace my brake pads, the knees, and refocus the headlights, the eyes. Then, like the mechanic, they could issue a pink slip, allowing me to get myself registered for another year. Wouldn't we all like that? Yeah. Once a year! The pit stop! That's not just the medical appointments, it's also the hairdresser. Unless a chap has been given the gift of baldness... I can see some people have been given that particular gift. But unless you've been given the gift of baldness, a man over 60 must attend the hairdresser at least once every 5 weeks. There was a time in my life when I'd let the appointment slide. I'd leave at 10 or 12 weeks and, despite waiting, merely move from lad to louche or haughty to hippie or at best from tidy to trendy. No longer. Once you're over 60, a two-week extension past your normal hair appointment starts to matter. It's the difference between well-preserved old dog and reminds me of the Unibomber. Who knew that late middle age would require such constant effort? Keeping the weight gain to reasonable levels is another full-time occupation. Now, luckily, in our household, we've just finished watching the SBS series Alone. Have you seen Alone? It's good. It's a show in which contestants try and survive in the Tasmanian wilderness with limited tools. And the really smart contestants put on 10 or 12 kilos before they start so they can survive on their stores. And this is such good news for me. Because now whenever Jocasta queries my second beer or my third serve of nuts, I give it to her straight. Darling, I'm just training for the next series of Alone. I mean, you never know when a contestant might drop out at the last minute. You never know when the phone will ring. So I think it's best to be constantly prepared. Which brings us back to the medical appointments. I should be thanking the medical world for its care. When the call from Alone comes, I'll need sharp eyes. I'll need the knees my physio hopes to give me and skin that is cancer-free. I'll need the good teeth I could have if only I would respond to the dentist. And as for my haircut, that may be most crucial of all. After all, I'll have a starring role. An old bloke on television.
And that's the news from nowhere.
Jean.
Yes, about pit stops. I love that idea.
Yes.
But you know, a pit stop, the whole car gets a service and a makeover in under 60 seconds. And that would be great if you could go into a medical center and get everything checked by a whole team at the same time.
Yeah.
You just open everything and they just fit all and then you're home.
Oh, I know it'll include the big end. I mean, that's fine. I don't mind.
I will sign up for this program if, like the car metaphor, they put me on a table and then shoot me up in the air and do everything from underneath. I would definitely sign up for that.
It'll be good.
And also, you make another point off the cusp of medical, but it seems like Tasmania is having the brightest time of Australia's life at the moment. Like, it's on all the shows. Alone's not the only one. It's got Euphoria. It's got Deadlock. It's like everyone's making shows in Tasmania. I think we should make a show about the stresses of being in Hobart on a day that the Salamanca markets aren't open. What do I do? I don't know what to do.
It's tough. It's tough in the city. Now, there's a great tradition in Wagga Wagga telling tourists to grab their surfboard so they can catch the 5 o'clock wave when it comes down the Murrumbidgee.
That's just cruel. That's cruel.
Look, it is cruel. Mind you, we in Sydney are just as cruel. We tell our tourists that the loud siren on Bondi Beach means that it's the tourist's turn to swim. And you know what? They always believe you because you say, well, you can see all of the locals getting out of the water to afford you your... Makes sense. So here's my question. What other tales would you like to tell our unsuspected tourists when they arrive in Australia, just to add to their fun? Jennifer.
Well, first of all, Richard, can I say how great it is to be here at 5 o'clock? Because I'd actually just picked up my surfboard and didn't know if I'd make it because I had another appointment. But I would tell people in Sydney that there is a largish white and black bird with a very unique looking beak. And if you see that, it is a sign of good luck.
Ah.
If you see it in a rubbish bin, that's actually 7 years of good luck.
The mighty bin chicken. What else? What else are we going to tell them?
Oh, I would certainly be sure to alert the tourists that the service industry in this country is second to none, and they need to tip big. In cash.
In cash.
50%, yeah. Wouldn't you say?
And then, well, at least 50%. And then I think that there are some tourists, and I'm not saying they come from a country I'm familiar with, but I am just saying there are some that should be pointed out that one of the great joys of Australia is that you can cross a street wherever you want. Just walk right out there.
Look, I have observed that the tourists always already do that. The ABC audience, offices in Sydney are in Ultimo, and there's lots of foreign students there, and they just get entirely freaked out by the zebra crossing. They kind of don't get it, and so they stand and they hover at the start of the zebra crossing, and then they don't know whether they're meant to go or whether they're meant to stop, so they hover, and then the cars slow, and then they don't move, so then the cars speed up. And so in the end, quite sensibly, because they don't understand the rules, they give up, and they go about 20 metres down the road and cross there.
Yeah, well.
And I always think it's one of the curiosities of Sydney that the only place that no one crosses the road is at a zebra crossing.
The other one that I think is fun is that I work near a hospital. You see this at all hospitals, is there is a pedestrian, there's a zebra cross, and then when an ambulance at the hospital I work at, the ambulances have to go through this zone, and pedestrians will still just walk out. I mean, here's an ambulance coming at full siren, and it's like, well, this is my space. You'll just have to wait.
But it makes sense, Tommy, because at least if the worst happens...
Well, they're right there. I know. I've long argued, why have zebra crossing at all? We need the business.
Jane, what are you going to tell them?
Well, in England, the category of advice to tourists was cornered by Jared Hofnung, who advised tourists, why not try the famous echo in the British Museum reading room? That was so hilarious, and I wish that I could have tried the echo in the reading room. But in a, we could say to tourists here, Australian rules encourages spectator participation, preferably nude. And if there is nothing but horse racing on TV in a pub, please feel free to change channels. blue bottles on the beach may be worn as festive earrings. And when you see the swim between the flag signs, it means if you can't swim, you've got to find somewhere else where there are no flags.
And once in, do wave to the lifeguard.
I just always wave. Seemingly unconscious crocodiles may be roused by mouth to mouth. And Vegemite makes an effective sunscreen.
Okay, I've got some. Bus fares are negotiable. Please haggle with the driver. Vegemite is a yummy dessert, much like chocolate mousse. It should be eaten direct from the jar with a spoon. Australia is a very style-conscious country. In Queensland, the sign Danger, Crocs, refers to the rubberised footwear. It's considered so unattractive that people should be warned. And most towns have road signs marked P. These indicate streets on which it is considered acceptable to relieve yourself. Now, who? Question from this week's news. Who has declared checkmate on the check? Who has declared checkmate on the check?
What? Kerry.
Come on.
No,
come
no,
on.
That'd be
anyone.
Jim Chalmers. He said the checks have to be phased out by 2030.
2030, no more checks.
I'm surprised because I've got I thought they were already more or less phased out, except I've got two checks sitting on my desk at home. They've been there since last year. One's from the RSPCA and one isn't. And the reason they've been there so long is because who remembers? I mean, they're not for much money. And I put them in my bag and then I go down the street and then I don't go to the bank because I don't know whether it's different here in Wagga to the city, but in the bank, you just don't think of going to your bank because you go in, you know, when you remember to go in, everyone else remembers to go in. There's just queues fucking everywhere. And then nobody's at a counter anymore. They're just standing up like they're ready to pack a bag and skedaddle. No one. And then you wave a check and they recoil like you've just blown your nose on it. Like they just don't even understand what it is and they have to put in a code with their forefinger like some prehistoric thing. And then they say, you've got to put the check in that slot thing over there and you go to put it in and because it's been at the bottom of your bag with the Mentos and the makeup for so long, it just sort of disintegrates. And the other thing is, checks have a use-by date now. Who would have thought that they expire and then you've got to ring up the RSPCA and they say the check's in the mail and then Jim Chalmers says they don't exist anymore. And you know why? And he's probably going to abolish cash too and checks so that we don't know when he's nicked our money.
Well, the cash thing's so important, isn't it? Because that cash is plausible deniability. That's what I like about cash. You can spend your money at, Dan Murphy's to an excessive amount, and it's fine.
Yeah.
But when you do it on your credit card, there's just Woolworths, Coles, Dan Murphy. Bunnings, Woolworths, Coles, Dan Murphy. And it looks, there's a possibility Dan Murphy is a charity for aged, aged Catholic nuns, you know. It's in the name, I guess, but...
That's a really good idea.
There's no plausible deniability with
credit.
But I
like that. They've even taken that further. I think the companies know because almost all, any sort of transaction now will ask you, do you want a receipt? Do you want your receipt? You know, you say you pay for cash, you buy a dozen bottles of wine. Do you want your receipt? Don't be stupid. Somebody might see that. No, I don't want a receipt. Everywhere, they just keep constantly, nobody wants to be...
Accountable. That's good. Less accounts, the better.
But I'm surprised.
But also the receipt they give you, have you noticed, it's the receipt they give you, go to Officeworks or something, the receipt they give you is designed to fade at just the point where you need to claim those pieces of paper to Jim Chalmers, and you notice the sum has disappeared.
Yeah. But I think that's what I'm surprised he's phasing out the check because it feels like that is a way to keep a lot of money out of circulation. because of what you're talking about. It is very easy to lose checks. I don't know if it was ever a thing here, but in America, checks are, when you get your checkbook to write checks with, they are sequenced by number. So your check, if your first account, your check would be 001. But a lot of people won't accept checks in the 00 range because that shows it's a brand new account and you might not have money.
What?
So then banks, aware of that, will give you your new account and issue with 111 checks that are already sequenced up 100 checks to give the illusion that you've written a hump of checks before. The entire game of checks has always been a little bit curious to me, and I'm surprised they're giving it up.
Yeah. We can no longer say the check is in the mail.
No.
What about novelty checks? I've always liked the idea of a novelty check.
Which What's going to happen to them?
Implies the existence of a novelty wallet. Equally large. I actually thought that checks had already been stopped. I didn't realize they were still going.
Oh, they're still going. RSPCA. Yeah.
Wow.
Just ask them, they'll send you one. You've got a sick pet.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah. We can fight back, you know, to the government. Every time the government sticks its hands out, we just give them an IOU on paper.
Wait a minute, that sounds like a check.
That's another form of check. Now, it has been the most amazing week because it's been the week that Kathleen Folbig has been released from prison after 20 years of being falsely accused and falsely imprisoned. I talked to her dear friend, Tracy, and everyone deserves a friend like Tracy. So this is a woman who's rung her in prison every day for 20 years and was there waiting for her to come out of the prison gates. And I spoke to her about that first 24 hours where Kathleen came to live with Tracy, and all of and she was just giggling with delight and joy about the fact that Kathleen was doing all these things that she hadn't done for 20 years, these ordinary things. She'd taken a bath. Mm-hmm. How amazing was that? She'd cuddled the dog. How amazing was that? She'd made potato bake, and she'd also tried to work out how to work the television with streaming services and was freaked out by it. So here's my question. If you'd been locked away for 20 years, what are the parts of ordinary life you'd miss most and what would surprise you about the way the world has changed? Jennifer Wong.
Well, when you put all those things in sequence like that so beautifully, Richard, I feel like my what I'm about to say is very flippant, but I would really miss, I know I should probably say seeing my family and friends, but I would really miss going to the supermarket and just walking up and down the chip aisle and observing how many different flavours there are. The other day I saw one that was flavoured beef Wellington. That is a lot of responsibility for one chip to hold. The pastry, the beef. The oven cookedness, like the gravy. How one flake of potato holding that much responsibility?
Because 20 years ago they only had two sorts, right?
Light and tangy. Yeah.
Gene, if you were locked up for 20 years, what would surprise you about the world? And what would you take delight in doing these ordinary things?
Oh well, first of all, there'd be 20 years to catch up on, wouldn't there? 20 years. I mean, 20 years ago we were still talking about the Sydney Olympics. And the Gulf War too.
Which is funny because they had already finished 3 years before.
Yeah.
Exactly. We're still talking about it.
I know we were talking about it because it's the only time in history somewhere that Sydney siders have been nice to each other.
And Gulf War II had started, and I suppose I'd be really happy that that war was now unfashionable until someone told me about Putin, and then I'd be sad. Mostly I would do like what Jennifer does. I'd just wander from shop to shop being outraged by the prices today. Although if I'd been wrongly doing time for 20 years, I'd get a lawyer to talk to the government and make sure I'd be able to pay everything, buy everything there is, except, of course, time.
If you could only get them to give you a check. Tommy Dean, what would you miss most about ordinary
life? Well, it's tricky. I suppose in some ways I feel in a sense she's lucky that she came out in 2023. Had she been released in 2020, that would have been awkward. I thought you said I was out of lockdown. Everyone's still in lockdown. Do I understand?
This is worse than Grafton Prison.
So bad. They won't even let me go to the store. I don't. My problem. I would like to feel that I would have emerged from that experience wanting to delight in the grand simpleness of life. But I know myself. I do not think I have Nelson Mandela inside me. I think I would have stewed and angered, and everything would have pissed me off. And now she has to go through all the angers that we went through. Like, I'd just be, what do you mean there's no plastic straws? I waited 20 years to get a Coke. No plastic straws. Still going to buy the Coke, and what do you mean there's no bags to take them home in? Got to buy a bag? Lose her mind. Try to pay for it at the front of the store. What do you mean you don't take money?
I'll have to use my big novelty checkbook.
Money! Money! Man, I'd be so mad. So mad. I used to have Foxtel. What do I have now? Streaming's the hardest part. Yeah. Like, I just went through my streaming budget, and I canceled 6 services because I couldn't believe I was like signed up for everything accidentally, and then. Well, they get you with the trial process, don't they?
I think that worked with Kathleen too.
That's exactly it. You just sign up for a trial, and the next thing you know, it's 20 years of locked-in contracts. Unbelievable. Be so mad. What do you mean you can hang the TV on the wall? 20 years ago, you couldn't hang the TV on the wall?
Yeah.
It's crazy. What do you mean you're frost-free refrigerator? What? What? And prices. Absolutely prices. That would be the hardest part.
Prices.
I mean, I don't know. I still reel from it because I, from America eyeballs to Australian eyeballs, I've never understood Australian property market. But it still feels like in the last 20 years, you're like, well, Kathleen, we'll think about now looking at getting you a home. How's $1,000 a week sound? It sounds like I need a straw. $1,000 a week.
Yeah.
A week.
Yeah, or you could buy one for $1.5
million. $1.5 million. Oh, I'd be so mad. And other things, would just be like that weird retrospective. Scott Morrison? What?
Thank God it's Friday with Richard Glover.
Thank God it's Friday. Of course, we are live from the Wagga Comedy Festival and in the Civic Theatre, the beautiful Civic Theatre in Wagga Wagga. We have Gene Kitson, we have Tommy Dean, we have Jennifer Wong, and we have our lovely audience. Thank you for coming. By the way, Jennifer Wong has her new show, which is called Jennifer Wong Has No Peripheral Vision, which is true.
Mm. It's totally true. She actually thinks she's doing this show by herself.
It's on, if you're a Sydney sider, it's on July 15 at the Factory. She's already done her Wagga show as part of the Comedy Festival. Now, children with older siblings, I read this week, are far less likely to develop allergic diseases, according to new Australian research. The reason? They get exposed to germs from their older siblings, and that helps them get their allergic reactions up. Now, apart from being covered in hideous germs, what else did your siblings do for you? Gene Kitson.
Well, I was the oldest, so I don't know what they did for me, my younger siblings. Nothing, I would say, nothing.
But you gave them your germs.
I gave them my germs. I wasn't allowed to do... My sister was allowed to do things at 16 that I had to wait to 18 to do. You know, that's always the way. I gave them the wealth of knowledge and experience I had. They are less likely to get allergies, but they're also less likely to be victims of scams because they had... me tormenting them their entire lives. I don't know whether I've told this story before, but I've got a younger sister and a younger brother, and once we got it in our head that my dad might have been having an affair. Oh, I know, my mum said, your father's having an affair, he goes off on the weekend. And so my sister and I decided to hide my little brother in the boot of my father's car. And we said, Belle, you get in the boot and then we won't close the boot properly. And whenever Dad stops, find out where he is, you know. And he was about 7. Anyway, Jan went off, and of course, as soon as he hit the first bump, the boot closed, so he couldn't get out anyway. And by the time Dad came back, my brother was, you know, hysterical, and you know, we soothed him and we gave him something. I don't know. We just said probably grow up.
Sorry. Was your father having an affair?
We never found out, but I highly doubt it. They're still together. They just fight. That's just mum and dad. I know. No, I doubt it. I think he'd gone off to, you know, check out a car. He didn't even go to the pub, my dad. You know, he was not like that. But, you know, we were just trying to soothe mum. And I was the one, I didn't have to wear hand-me-downs like my brothers and sisters. My brother was always in my hand-me-downs. No, that's just joking. But I had to be, you know, I was experimented on, because the oldest is always experimented on by the parents, and mum decided she would, you know, try sewing clothes for me. And she sewed. I remember I got this two-piece bathers, but they met in the middle, and my mum said, look, I don't sew. My mum never sewed. But I know what I'll do. I just cut off the top and fold it down, and then you'll show some flesh in the middle of your bathers. And so I went to bed, and when I got up in the morning, I tried the bottom of my bathers on, and instead of cutting the top off and folding it down, she'd cut one of the legs off and folded it in. And I was half in and half out of my first bikinis, which was illegal at my age. So I made a lot of sacrifices for those kids.
Siblings. Apart from being covered in hideous germs, Tommy Dean, what did your siblings ever do for you?
It feels like we're being called out, because I'm the oldest as well, and now I feel like I'm Typhoid Tommy. I was just bringing it all to them. And technically, in one way, that was true, because we lived through, I was 68, 72, so 1975, I got chicken pox, and then in the chicken pox of the 70s, that was a call for a party. So we brought all the brothers together and a couple of cousins, and we had a everybody gets the chicken pox together party. So then we would all celebrate with chicken pox for a week. So I still say that was the greatest Jell-O party we've ever had. Just nothing but Jell-O and skin lesions. They have me to thank for that. They have me to thank for the first car, because when I turned 16, my parents bought me a car. But because of their very fair parents, a year later, when my next brother turned 16, they took my car away from me and gave it to him, like a delayed car pox. But I think you benefit a lot from, you know, the younger brothers. They did a lot. But I feel like I blazed the trail, because we went to a brand new high school. So I was, and I don't say this lightly, very popular. Very popular in high school, and very well known, very loved. And that made their high school years very easy. Because all the teachers just loved the fact that they were hanging out with, you know, Tommy Dean's younger brother. So good for them. So good.
I hope that they were grateful.
Oh, they were so grateful. they call me all the time. What? How much is this costing me? No, they're good. But I was trying to think what they did for me. My brother, we've talked about this before. He's in the Secret Service. But since I've last brought it up, he has now been promoted. My brother is the head of White House security.
This is true. This is true.
Yeah, I know you look at me like I'm lying. Which I always delight at, because why would I make that up? Why would I be proud of a family member in the White House of America?
Yeah, but how can one brother be the White House security guy and the other brother looks like the Unabomber?
I know.
Yeah.
I know. This has long been my argument that I don't have as nearly as much influence as I thought I did. I got them chicken pox, and then he's head of White House security. My other brother is biggity big with Coca-Cola Amatil, and my other brother is biggity big in the Sholo Council, and I'm here in Wagga trying to make you like me.
And succeeding!
Which means Joe Biden must be safe.
Jennifer Wong, apart from being covered in hideous germs, what did your siblings do for you?
Well, I am also the oldest, which makes me which makes me Germa for Wong. It probably sounds worse than typhoid or me. What my younger brother did for me was he would let me use his library card when I had maxed out my library card. But this was always conditional on certain, you know, favours being exchanged in order to get the library card.
This is the most nerdy story I've ever heard.
My daughter.
If your parents knew what you two were up to, they'd be so mad.
My mum is listening. What a way to find out. Oh, my goodness. So, because you're not supposed to do that. Everyone's library card is their own library card. But
kids, are you sharing needles? No, just sharing books.
And knowledge. I always knew that this wouldn't last forever. I guess you could say that I knew that it was always a matter of being on borrowed time.
Very good.
See, that wordplay grows from a lifetime on borrowed books. Now, the Wheel of Death, a thank you to our audience here in the Wagga Civic Theatre for providing these topics for Tommy to take on today. Yes. Very eclectic topics from our audience here in Wagga. Dean, will you choose one, please?
Of course I will.
It's in a beanie of death. It's the Wagga Comedy Festival beanie. Ah. It's not the hat of death, it's the beanie of death this week. What is it?
Okay, and the topic is, speaking of the organ recital, knee replacement.
Knee replacement. Thank you, lady there.
90% of the audience.
Well, I was just going to say.
And the panel.
Yeah. Let's go through the hat. Knee replacement, hip replacement, knee replacement. Cataracts. See, I think it's a mistake. This is where I sit on knee replacement. It feels like evolution. We're spurning it. You know, I think we're at a point now where we're supposed to. We have a certain planned obsolescence, and I think that it's what we need to do. I think we need to just let it happen, because I think when your knees go, what your body is telling you is, sit in front of the TV. And we've made small mention of this already here tonight, but the world has certainly evolved to give you endless choice on endlessly comfortable couches. They will bring food to your house from any restaurant within a 5-kilometer radius. There is no reason to ever bend your knee again. And by the time you get to that point, you have earned the right to eat what you want, watch what you want, and not have to get up out of your chair. And I think we are making a terrible, terrible mistake replacing knees. Absolutely. There has been one slight drawback. I have yet to see the Barca Lounger toilet combo. And I don't know why it hasn't been invented, because in the one in my dream mind, you know, they have the lever by the side that, you know, normally you pull to pop your
Dawson.
Feet up.
It's a Smokey Dawson.
It's like flush
Dawson.
And pop foot at the same time.
We need a Smokey Dawson toilet.
Or a Jason recliner is the other Australian.
Or here's my other theory. If we're going to replace knees, let's replace them with better knees with a 360 ball joint. Where you can just walk in any direction, kind of like a crab, but with full articulation. Forget the awkwardness of backpedaling. Just turn your legs around and walk the direction you want to go, but still look behind you if that's necessary. Need to go down a creepy side alley? Just do that. Turn your legs, walk down comfortably while keeping your vision arranged anywhere you want to go. It would be a lot more fun. Also, think of the dancing. Think how fun the Charleston would be with 360-degree articulation in your knees. Let's bring it to the wrists as well. If we could get wrists and knees in 360 degrees, oh, what fun we'd have. These are my... And make them bionic. Why are we stopping at just replacing it? 360-degree articulation, and it can give you up to, say, 1.5 meters of height as required. No longer needing to use stepladders or small little step-ups to get to the high parts of your pantry, which you probably fell off of, causing an injury, which is why you had to knee replace in the first place. And nightlights. Nightlights in your knees as well. That's all.
Thank God it's Friday! Does he die, ladies and gentlemen, or does he live?
He lives.
He lives. On thank God it's Friday.
AFL would be amazing to watch. Not to mention the bedroom, you know, like, maybe. Sorry.
Well, no,
sorry.
I agree.
That's my mind.
That was where I was thinking about the hip replacements. That would have been a different topic.
Yeah.
But it would have made Viagra more possible.
It would be better in the bedroom because you could have a knee trembler and it would really mean it. artificial intelligence systems will be powerful enough to kill many humans within just 2 years. This is according to the chief advisor to the UK government. That's if nothing is done to find a way of to control them. How do you propose we should keep control of the artificial intelligence system before it controls us? Jennifer Wong.
Well, last week there was a story about AI being able to show us the background of important famous artworks like the Mona Lisa. You could fill in the background so we could see what the full picture looked like. No one has asked for this, by the way. They just did it. No one ever wanted to know. It's like it showed the back of the Abbey Road cover, the Beatles Abbey Road cover with a blimp in the background. And it's, anyway, no one needs to know this. So I think what we should do is we should give AI little inconsequential tasks like this.
I'll keep it busy.
Keep it busy. Give it a hobby, like an art hobby. Then it can develop the existential angst of being an artist and forget about killing us.
Yeah. Excellent.
Great.
Excellent.
So get it building model aircraft or running pigeons or something like that.
Yeah, tapestries, you know, lawn bowls, or everything.
Collage.
Wait a minute, are you talking about AI or men?
Well, I come.
You're trying to make men obsolete, but you know what you fellas should do? Go roll some balls and other balls.
Jenkinson, how are we going to control AI?
Oh, well, we can't, obviously. Has anyone here read Robert Harris's The Fear Factor, that book? It's about a stockbroker machine.
No, we're too fearful.
I know. Well, it's about a stockbroker who creates AI to invest, and this AI machine sends all these companies broke and makes billions of dollars, but then it gets out of control, and he goes to shut it down, and he can't because the AI machine has built a safe place by ordering online where it stores itself, which you can't get into, and finally he gets into it, and in the end, spoiler alert, he burns the place down, and he burns down with it, which the AI would have predicted anyway. So it doesn't make any sense. But, you know, but it's scary. Like,
it's scary.
The AI protected itself by just ordering all, you know, to build a safe place for it where no one could get in, which is possible, of course. And AI, you know, like AI can just read, it can write books, it can songs, poems, TV programs, although probably not Love Island, because there are some things even AI won't do. this whole program could be AI right now. It could be AI. Just feed the best years of 20 years of TGIF and everything about Wagga, and then he...
I want to see the computer that's got a two-piece bikini made by its mother. Doesn't exist.
Hey, and people at home, you don't know that Richard's lips are not moving. I mean, we can't control AI because it ingests everything online about AI and probably just, you know, like builds a better version.
Well, you've just got to be very, they say, these experts say, you've got to be very careful about the question you ask it to solve. So you say, solve diabetes. That sounds a good thing to do. Type 2 diabetes, solve it. So it says, okay. And then it kills all obese people.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you say, solve climate change. And they say, okay, we can solve climate change. That's fine. Destroy all humanity.
Sure, yeah. And it can put in AI-friendly governments when the government tries to restrict AI. It can put in, you know, like perhaps it already has. You know, you just have to listen to the Treasurer explain why it's all our fault for buying things like food and shoes. You know, like, and look at the Teals. They got elected in and we've never heard from them again. I think they're just a fragrant, bunch of chatbots. If ever I saw one. So I think, you know, the only way we can resist is just write everything down and talk to people face to face and write them letters and notes and things like that.
What about the Daleks from Doctor Who? Couldn't we build some stairs? Wouldn't that stop them?
Yeah.
Stairs. Jennifer Wong, how are you going to stop the AI computers?
Oh, with art, Richard.
Huh? Yeah. Distract them, yes. Like Jennifer's already said about the art.
Collage, basically.
Yes. Well, the hard part is that, you know, there's this weird argument that they're doing all the weird things AI, like why are they writing TV and why are they writing comedy and when working in painting? I think the way that we stop AI is we have to introduce what all artists suffer from the most, and that is a little bit of self-doubt. You got to program a little bit of self-doubt in there, and they're like, you know, make us a painting of something amazing, and then this amazing painting happens, and the little part of them will go, I probably could have done better. I don't think the people will like it. Yeah. Oh, no, the people won't like it. That's what we need.
Yeah.
That's what we need. Other than that, maybe like a password protocol. like give them passwords they can't remember. They've been doing it to us for years. But I have no hope. But I don't think we're going to go out on a grand bang. All the fear-mongers are suggesting that they're going to grab the missiles and blow us up. I think they're going to nickel and dime us. I'm starting to already sense, like, my toaster will burn every third piece of toast, even though it's on the exact same setting. I think it's getting inside information. Sometimes there's like a part of my refrigerator that'll just go like suddenly too cold, and now something's frozen that shouldn't be frozen because it's a fridge, not the freezer. And then that'll come out, and then like, I'll go into the freezer and something's gone a little soft in there. And I think, you know, and it's usually the chicken. Because, you know, you start freezing in chicken the wrong way, and the next thing you know, you're dead.
Yeah. It's destroying human beings one by one.
They're going to kill us.
The appliances.
With botulism.
Yeah. Forget the big chat GPT. It's the toaster.
The toaster's going to get you.
Who are the winners and losers of this week? Tommy Dean.
Chickens! the winners. I think the big winner this week is Canada. Very exciting that they are exporting all of their smoke into America. That is very clever. Very clever, Canada. Well done, you. There will be a call for walls in the next election with fans on top of them.
And all of New York is saying, oh, Canada.
Yeah, it's so terrible. So terrible. And did I say winner? Was that winner?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
the loser, New York.
Always New York. But I want to make double winner. I always love it when we come down here. This is one of the greatest live shows that we do. So I always take an extra special moment to thank Waka Waka for being.
Yeah.
Yay. Yay.
Winners and losers. Very quickly, Jennifer Wong.
Anthony Albanese visited a banh mi shop in Hanoi this week, and they got lots of attention, so they are the winner for being truly unbegettable. and the loser is El Nino has meant that snow lovers have had very little snow this winter, which means they have had to skedaddle somewhere else for their holiday.
Jen Kitson, winners and losers.
Our loser is golf, of course, because the shock merger between the PGA and netball or something, I don't know, who cares? I don't know. And the winner is, of course, Prince Harry, who took the Mirror newspaper to court to defend his privacy. And every detail, every word has been shattered from the headlines and laughed about in bars all over the world. And you can't buy that level of privacy.
Please thank Jen Kitson, Tommy Dean, Jennifer Wong, Rachel Whitchurch, and our audience in Wagga. Thanks for being part of Thank God It's Friday. Next week we'll be in the south coast town of Milton for Story Fest with Carlo Ritchie, Tommy Dean, Angela Lavoie-Pierre with music from Tall Sean. Until then, I'm Richard Glover, and thank God it's Friday!